Welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordic podcast. At Evolution, we're committed to helping people and Nordic tech organisations realise their potential. Our goal is to develop deep relationships with individuals, building trust to make doing business a lot easier. I'm Georgia Benton from Evolution Recruitment Solutions, and today I'm your host. So today I'm joined by Alexander Fugger, who's a CEO of ShopLab. We have Oscar Eriksson, who's the head of tech and CTO at Afound. We have Mehdi Mohseni, who's technical lead at Polestar. And we have Christian Englund, who's an agile product owner at Alsol Group, to discuss the future of e-commerce. Before we delve deeper into the topic, let's work our way around the room with some introductions. I'd love to know who you are, what you do, and what your biggest passion is currently. Alex, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my name is Alex, and I'm running ShopLab, which is a platform where we kind of come together with composable commerce. So we are a solution that is an all-in-one management platform for distributed systems focused on e-commerce. And we are having we have a slogan like centralize, connect and conquer. So we really are passionate about e-commerce. And at the moment, I think my biggest passion is this company. I really love developing this product and this company, and we're doing great things going forward. So yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much for introducing yourself. Oscar, do you want to introduce yourself too?
Yes. Hi, everyone. I'm Oscar. I'm head of tech at Afound. For those of you who don't know Afound, it's a digital marketplace within the H&M group. And our slogan is that we give great fashion new life. So my background is I've been a software developer for a number of years, but then recently transitioned to more like a leadership role here at Afound. My main responsibility is like setting the direction for the technical platform at Afound, making sure that it's scalable and flexible and built for the long term, and also leading the development team and the tech department we have at Afound. My passion is psychology, and currently I'm really interested in decision making, how you can make the best decisions based on the data. I mean, we get a lot of data these days, so how can you like overcome your biological defaults and make the best decision with the data you have at hand?
Perfect. Thank you so much. And Mehdi, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Mehdi Mohseni, and I'm right now a technical lead in Polestar. I'm technical lead of the fleet e-commerce in Polestar. Basically, we are responsible for getting B2B orders in Polestar. I think I don't need to explain what is Polestar. So, and then my background also, I'm a software developer for many years. I still call myself software developer, but I like to lead the team and lead the developers, teaching some new technologies that I learned to the other developers. And yeah, this is what I'm doing now, leading the team and also being kind of code guardian. And then my passion is still programming language. So I really like to discover them, learning some new programming language, and yeah, comparing them, writing some blogs about them. Yeah, this is my passion.
Amazing. Perfect. And last but not least, Christian, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Well, I'm Christian Englund, and I'm an agile product owner, and I'm passionate about e-commerce and team building. I'm working in Alsel Group, and we as a company, we offer professional customers comprehensive range of products and related services in water and sewage, heating, sanitation, etc. And I'm very proud of the company for many reasons, but naming two specific reasons is one, the colleagues. I have wonderful colleagues here. And two, and that this is close to my heart, that sustainability is very close to Alsel's heart. So it's part of the reason for me being here. So what am I passionate about in my private life? I would say agile ways of working and how to scale development. I think about it constantly, and I consume a lot of information around this because this is where I run into issues in companies, and I want to solve these issues as part of the solution in every company I'm a part of. So that was me.
Well, thank you all for introducing yourselves.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Now that we've established a context to each of you, let's move on to the topic in focus. You all have a question on the future of e-commerce. As usual, I'll work around the room and I'd love you to give me the reasons behind your question for each of you. And you'll all have the opportunity to give your take on the situation too. So let's start with yours, Christian. So I have, what role does AI play in the future of e-commerce? Would you be able to give me a little bit of context behind that?
Does it need? It's almost a question back. Of course, we are all interested in what AI can do for our companies, and where AI can do the heavy lifting, and we don't have to do the heavy lifting. And having these experts and this very insightful group of people in this conversation, I was interested in hearing. From your perspective, how do you see that you can sort of transfer some of the maybe tasks or that you do today into AI? That's one way of looking at it. But then we can also elevate what we do today. And one example there could be, let's say, search and recommendation. You know, those are two things that can be highly elevated with AI from my perspective. For example, what did you mean when you searched for something? Can we give you a more relevant reply today or fetch more relevant products in your search? Doing it with AI, we have millions of products in our inventory, and to have a manually added synonym, what's the English word for it? Synonym? Yeah, okay, awesome. To have manually list for millions of items it wouldn't be manageable. And wouldn't be easy to change at all. So how can we implement AI? This was just two examples. We have many more, but I want to listen into the expertise here in this conversation.
Yeah, makes sense. And what are your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, I could kind of go first. I have a lot of stuff regarding AI, of course, but I think on the front end part, we are seeing and has been seeing a lot of AI in kind of real-time suggestions for products and personalization and all of that. And I think that that will definitely develop a lot. But I think my take on AI in regard to e-commerce today is more connected to kind of behind the scenes in our case. So that's what we are working a lot on right now, to kind of streamline the e-commerce organization and overall kind of automate repetitive tasks in general. So we are at ShopLab, we are focused on mainly kind of product information. So we are a classical kind of product information management system, but we do kind of combine that with AI and automations and connecting the tech stack that our e-commerce store is composed of today. So in that case, we are seeing a lot of stuff, like kind of simple stuff like translations, just to move the business into a new market and being able to translate all of the product data That's something that we have implemented in our product that makes our customer move much faster to kind of implement a new market, and also to train models for each company to write good descriptions, for example. So we are training models to be able to write the way the company really speaks. So we take all of the current data and combine that with product attributes. And when a new product comes into the system, an AI already knows a good description, or a suggestion, at least, for a description that follows the tone of voice that you're used to. So we're seeing kind of a lot behind the scenes where we are using AI today. And I think that that will probably be something that we are pushing a lot. That's something that it's nothing that the end customer really sees, but obviously there is a bunch of stuff in the front end that will come up as well.
I have a kind of similar thought, same as what Alexander said, because, you know, the whole idea behind an e-commerce system is you make more margin for your customer. So, and then what many people see is that regarding AI is the traditional way of using AI. So, for example, you know, customizing the search based on the customer search, or, you know, this kind of stuff. But there are so many things happen in the background that cost for the customer. You know, when, for example, the order has been placed, then there are so many processes regarding the support, regarding the, you know, packing, everything. So our focus, at least sometime using AI in the background to make this thing smoother for our customer. For example, one use case that we recently work on that is, you know, sometimes we are getting something called purchase order. We call it purchase order. That one basically is the customer writing the text. Okay, I want to have a car with this specification. You know, they just write their thought about that car. So, but it takes long time for our operator, our system operator, to convert that one to the actual car configuration that we have. And we recently implemented something that convert that one. It was not hard at all, but it saves a lot of time, which means a lot of money from the organization. So it converts that text to the car configuration. So I think the focus in that area is really important. And also I mentioned the support or after sale, it's part of this e-commerce system that could be automated by AI as well. And not, I mean, the traditional, chatbot that basically doesn't solve anything from the customer. But if you connect your system or the AI and the train the model based on the customer product, based on the the exact business of the customer, then it could save a lot of time and then make the customer happier at the end.
Yeah, I mean, super interesting to hear your thoughts on it. It's an interesting topic for sure. And I mean, if I feel we're in the phase that we like, you know, seeing through the hype and getting more practical. So connecting to your question, Christian, looking at the more customer-facing part of it, I think when we talk about generative AI, customer care is a really good like part that we can really, you know, make a difference for the customers, being able to respond to easy questions, maybe like getting information from point B and getting to point B to the customers. So I think chatbots will be a hot topic during this year, that we can create, you know, smarter, more efficient chatbots for the customers that can, you know, catering to their needs. And also you mentioned search, Christian. I think if you look like midterm, long term, that I mean, the traditional chatbots will not only be like a support for the customers, it will actually be more like a shopping assistant for you. So, I mean, there is an ongoing revolution in the search, and you will have the traditional search where you search for a product and you get what you need, and you can also search for, you know, nuances and variations on the product. But I also think that going into a site for shopping, it's not that you go through the navigation in the future. You will actually interact with the shopping assistant. Okay, I need clothes for this party on Friday. What can you offer me? And that's kind of like where you start the customer journey. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to follow. And also, like, maybe a question to you, Alexander. You mentioned translation product descriptions. Like, how do you measure quality in a good way? And do you see like a differences between languages, what the models can perform currently?
Yeah, it obviously depends on the market. And we are training kind of different models for different kind of product segments, of course. So one AI model is really good at describing clothing and are really good for kind of coming up with a good description. Then we might use another model to translate that into a different language. So it's kind of a combination. I think that will be the interesting part when kind of different AI models can work together. And that's kind of the next phase of everything. And today we are manually kind of combining everything. It's hard to get everything right. And obviously we need a manual check of everything because sometimes an AI can come up with crazy stuff. But also every time you save a change in a description, we train that change into the model again. So more you use kind of the system, it trains itself. So it's getting better and better and better. So I think that's how we will kind of continue doing this.
And I think one benefit starting with internal processes as you're doing is that you know, the security aspects and getting mitigating the risk of the AI hallucinating, you get more control when you have, you know, integrated into the internal processes in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And otherwise, I think that we will continue, obviously, on using AI for marketing. Specifically, we are seeing, you know, segmenting customers and especially predicting the next purchase and promote the right product at the right time. We have been talking about this for feels like 10 years to be able to do this, but it's kind of now it's getting easier to getting there with AI. Obviously, I think that we'll see an increase in kind of stop getting emails about women's clothing to my inbox. That would be amazing. So I'm hoping for the best.
Amazing, perfect. And yes, with that we'll move on to the next question. Which relates quite well, Oscar. So how do you build a good personalized experience for customers to build that strong long-term relationship with them? Would you be able to give me a little bit of a background behind why you've asked that?
Yeah, I mean, we all seen how e-commerce evolved over the last couple of years, like from a fast transaction kind of setup to building more of a long-term relationship with a customer. So My question is like, how do we build a long-term relationship and trust with the customer? Like always having our brand top of mind and also building an emotional bond between the customer and the brand and then be able to cater to the need and increase demand from the customers, giving them a more rewarding, more personalized experience, both with site experience, but also, as Alexander mentioned, the marketing side of things, that it's personalized in that way.
Cool. Kristen, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, this is it's a good question. I was thinking myself, yeah, how do you build a good personalized experience? And I think about, and we often in my line of work with my team, we think about how do we know who is who? Because that is sort of the source for us when it comes to giving a personalized experience, or it's one of the sources, but it's one of the stronger sources in our team, at least. Meaning you need to have a login. You need to have a login so we can recognize the actual user. And with that, we can pull in the previous purchases. We can pull in a lot of stuff, and then we can mix it up with what time of year is it? What did the customer do last year and stuff like that? Or what did the customer do 1 month ago? And what do we think that they will do 1 month from now? So I would just say it's the login is a very interesting topic in having a good personalized experience from my experience. Maybe it's not that charming answer, but I think it's a central piece. And I think it's something that we really need to address when it comes to the privacy issues here as well. So it's sort of two sides. I don't see that they contradict each other, but I think we need to be mindful when we walk into this area, because some people don't want to be recognized. So we need to address that as well. I think that's the other side, the mindfulness about not being recognized at all, not wanting to be recognized. So maybe not the answer you were looking for, but it at least was a good, I think it was a really good question, and I thought about it, but I don't have a fantastic answer, I'm afraid, Oscar. How do you think about it?
I mean, as you said, it's a tricky question because personalization and rewarding experience means different things for different customers and different segments, and you can look at the demographic as well. So I think the first point is, how do you gather data in a nice, trustful, efficient way with the customers? I mean, obviously, you can look at the transaction level, but how do you make a customer a first-time purchaser and a second time, and you get the snowball running? So I think the thing to figure out here is to gather the data in a trustworthy way. And once you have the data on the customer, then you can actually, you know, run AI models on it, being proactive, making sure that, okay, we know that if we're talking about fashion, now we're approaching the summer, okay, you probably want some summer clothing. So I agree, it's a difficult question, but I think like long term is the key here, that you build a long term relationship and not, you know, not looking for like a short term fast transaction kind of model as we had before.
Yeah, I totally agree there, because I would say that to build a good personalized experience, you need to motivate the customer to really want to share information to make their experience better. So it's a give and take model there. And obviously, we have to take consent and all of that seriously, and use the right tool for the right thing. But I need to say, I think that we've seen cases where, if we're looking at kind of personalized experience on site, where you will shuffle around products and you will promote different brands dependent on your navigation or anything like that. We've seen the opposite effect on sales, actually, when we have turned on personalization in some cases, not all cases, but we've been working a lot with teen fashion, for example, and that's an area where personalization doesn't really work, because in that case, it's a teenager browsing, looking for clothing, and it's almost 100% of the times, it's a parent that really makes the order. So in that case, we need to, if we personalize everything, the parent wouldn't really understand. If a teenager says to a parent that, go into the second page, I want that shirt on the second row, for example, they wouldn't see the same thing, and we are seeing kind of a decrease in sales and conversions based on that we have too much personalization. So I think in that case, it was really effective to be personalized in the aftermarket than be in on site. So that's that's just a take on it. But yeah
that's super interesting, okay. Because I guess you can fall into the mental trap that the more data you have on the customer, the more you know the customer. But as you said, like, it's when it comes to sizing within retail, for example, it's a bold statement saying that, okay, you should have this size, because if you're wrong, then you're losing the trust and the long term relationship. So it's really a balance here between, like, you know, building a really strict personalized site based on the data and actually just looking at the customer behavior, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I think one thing that also we should consider about this question is the integration with other system, which is already there for nowadays. For example, you know, when you are searching in Instagram or Google, then in your product in for example a Amazon, you see that the search is kind of customized based on your recent search in Google or other social media. So integration and also analyzing this the data from via integration by AI could make really good customer experience, because just inside the e-commerce system, even if we gather all information, but still we have limited information. because customer can search in many other places and customer can, you know, have different behavior. Also something else, for example, you know, if, for example, we can have more integration regarding customer habits. I recently read a blog regarding if we can extract information about weather habit of the customer. So we see, okay, when the weather is really cold, then the customer doesn't go out. And when the weather is better, the customer goes. So you can analyze that customer and see, okay, this customer is sensitive to warmness, or this customer is sensitive to coldness. Then based on that information, you can also customize. So I think we should expand our data input via different systems. For example, as I said, social media, Google search, and then also we should look at the new things. As I said, for example, this weather prediction, how customer behave with that, or when, for example, the alarm in their mobile phone. So because all of this can give us some information. So this customer is early bird. Then based on that, we can understand, okay, we need to show more, for example, jacket to this customer. And, you know, this kind of information could help. Usually then I think the old or traditional, again, I emphasize on this word traditional, because I think the traditional way is we focus on the information that we gather or the log we gather via our system, our e-commerce system, but we should expand this more and more.
Perfect. No, some great answers there, guys. Let's move on to the next question too. So Alex, I've got yours, which is, what are your predictions for the future development of B2B e-commerce? Tell me a little bit. I have an inkling where that comes from, but if you can tell us a bit more about that, that'd be perfect.
Yeah. I think that I've been in the e-commerce kind of business for a long time now, but it's always been like the B2B market or the B2B business has been a few years behind the customer market. They are adopting kind of slowly into this, but it feels like that market really is catching up right now. So we are seeing a lot of questions regarding kind of pushing mobile in the sense of purchase on the go or automated orders and everything like that. So it's obviously a lot behind the scenes, but I think that we are seeing also kind of the experience on site changing for B2B customers as well, because a few years ago no one really cared about how anything looked or worked actually on a B2B site, but it feels like we are catching up there, and there's a change in that. So I would love to hear you guys' opinion about that.
I can jump in here. But because right now I'm working almost 2 years with the B2B customer system, e-commerce system. And I could say, yeah, you're right. It's completely different environment, different requirement. And we should consider so many things that in the normal e-commerce system, you don't consider it. First of all, for example, in the B2B e-commerce, you should be flexible a lot more than the normal e-commerce. Because in the normal e-commerce system, when you lose one customer, it's mostly one product or one item. What I want to say, it's a completely different environment. I don't have concrete answer for this question, but I see, because, you know, it's kind of my daily problem or my daily struggle, because in Polestar we have two systems, one for end customer or normal customers and private customers and B2B. And I see in their system, they should consider so many things, but at the same time, it's much smoother for them because, you know, as I said, the flexibility, when you want to make the system flexible, then you make lots of complexity behind the scene. And that's something that we need to consider every day. And also, as we cannot just ignore one customer or customer requirement, because one customer could equal to 1,000 car units. And you cannot just say, okay, we cannot ignore this customer or this requirement. It's a stupid requirement. It could be a stupid requirement, but still we need to fulfill that one, because you need to show flexibility. It's critical for your business. And for example, one thing in discount in the normal e-commerce system is something, you know, it's not it's important, but it's not critical. But in the B2B e-commerce system, you need to have really flexible and extendable discount system. You need to have discounting system based on your customer requirement and based, and it should be, I mean, day by day, dynamic. You should evaluate the market because, again, I want to emphasize that in the normal e-commerce system, if you lose one customer, then it equals to one or, I don't know, two, three product. But in the B2B, it's really critical for the for your business. Because of that, you need to be competitive with other business in your e-commerce system. You need to analyze other system. And then let's say, for example, in the car market. So if another company start giving discount on this option, you need to act based on that very fast. You cannot wait. You cannot, you know, because then I, based on my experience, the customer direction could change really fast. So today, many B2B customers like to buy Tesla, for example. It could happen that tomorrow, just in one day, in one night, those customers change their direction and go to another company. So you need to have, you need to consider all of this in your B2B e-commerce system. So I don't know how much did I answer or I make more question to your question, but yeah, I think B2B e-commerce, and there is no that much documentation or I don't know blogs regarding the B2B e-commerce system. It's kind of untouched field or niche corner in this market.
Yeah, I agree absolutely. We're seeing a lot of requests regarding kind of dynamic pricing and all of that. But also, I think it's more important with kind of fraud detection and anomaly detection automations and all of that. So it's I agree. It's a different area. Even if we are kind of focused maybe more behind the scenes, the customer needs more information on each product, and they in some cases they need the configuration of a product, so you have to recommend a bunch of products or accessories and stuff like that. But it's more or less just a kind of how everyone sees the future of B2B. Are we moving towards business that we are using for customers, or is there a completely kind of a new direction? And it's obviously interesting regarding kind of configuring cars. I really thought about this before because if I go into the Tesla site, I couldn't really configure a car that much. I have a few options and nothing more. But I went into another brand and I didn't really understand the difference between different packaging, and I couldn't really make a decision on even how to go forward. And I felt like that's so bad. That's such a bad experience. When you really, I'm interested in kind of leasing a new car to my company, and I don't really understand what I'm buying. And in that case, They have completely failed in that case. But I think there's good and bad feelings about that, of course. It wasn't Polestar, I should say. It wasn't Polestar.
Maddie's glad.
Yeah, basically, we are working with those car leasing companies. And I completely understand what you mean and what you experience, because it's a challenge that we have. So, I mean, it also decrease your sales, because first you see so many orders, but then maybe it's also related to my question, but I will talk there. But many customers, they cancel their order because they after they order it, but after, I don't know, because usually when you order a car, the delivery is 6 months. During these 6 months, they go and investigate and do search, and then they realize, okay, I don't want this package. I don't want this option. This car is too expensive for me, or something else. So when you don't give your customer, you don't give the enough information to your customer, then it might end up to order cancellation. So these are critical thing that you should consider in your B2B e-commerce system?
Yeah, and my take on it, haven't worked on the B2B area for a while, but I mean, looking at it from a technical perspective, I think one challenge is that, I mean, you want to have a flexible and scalable platform, but you don't want it to customize, because I mean, I guess the situation end up in like having a big chunk of concentration of the revenue coming from a small proportion of the customers, and then you want to be able to cater to their needs, but then, you know, ending up having too many customizations and not having a platform that scales in the right way. And then I think also then, I mean, if you look at the tools that you have driving conversion, this is more of a question. Do you need other tools in the toolbox for a B2B site compared to B2C, or do you find it like similar how you can drive conversion in an effective way?
I think Christian would be the best guy to answer this, aren't you?
I hope we can shed some light on it. But I would like to address your initial question to start with, if that's okay. Because I think it was a really good question, just looking at it from a B2B perspective. I think, you know, there's two different customers and with that I mean B2B, B2C. You know, it's different possibilities. We talked about it, but one clear thing to me is that we have less data in B2B when it comes to how many customers we actually have on our site. Is it 10,000 or is it like in a customer B2C example, maybe hundreds of thousands? So the data to act on could be far less in a B2B, and I think that's a challenge, something that we need to address. Meaning we also take less data-driven decisions. We go more on gut feeling or hippo decisions or something like that. I think that's something that I've seen throughout the years, and that's a personal experience, and please challenge me if you don't agree. But I also think that the B2B business needs to prioritize sustainability and corporate social responsibility in a way that they haven't done before. And the platforms, they will need to offer options for environmentally friendly products and transparent sourcing information and stuff like that. And in my line of work, it means, for example, country of origin, where is the product produced and stuff like that. That is things that is very interesting for our customers. And we will be compared to the B2C segment, because every one of us, when we stop working at 5 o'clock, we become a customer. And so my search will be compared to Amazon search. I will not be compared to my biggest competitor. I have a different competitor after 5 than I have before 5, if you understand my gist here. So we will need to look at the B2C market and compare ourselves and benchmark ourselves to them. When it comes to delivery, for example, you know, we have drone deliveries from Amazon. It sounds exciting and stuff like that. We have sustainability questions that we need to address. CO2, you know, how much CO2 have this product produced? You know, that is driven to some extent from the B2C market. Reusability. We have for years now in H&M and other companies seen that you can actually have a secondhand market, and it's secondhand market in clothes has been there for many, many, many years. Will it be a secondhand market for bathtubs as well? Yes, of course it will be. It's just a matter of when and how do we deal with it. So I think we see sustainability and delivery options and payments, for example, bigger and smaller companies, completely different ways of paying the goods in my line of work. So I think it's a super good question. I just wanted to address it back here before we continued.
But are you using any tools today to drive conversions, let's say, or I think I might be wrong, but aren't you? Do you have any point systems to kind of keep customers coming back? Yeah, because I know if I buy batteries from you guys, I could buy batteries at ICA or wherever else. But how are you driving conversions? Because something that I've seen kind of with B2B customers is that they are obviously driving campaigns a lot. And as a B2B purchaser, I'm kind of willing to buy stuff that's a bargain at the moment, obviously, and that connects to me being a regular customer after 5, of course. So it should be driven like that. So But it's really interesting to know if you're using any tools and your thoughts about that.
I don't have direct insight into our loyalty program, but yes, we do have loyalty programs, but I don't have direct insight in how they work. It would be a fantastic topic for a coming conversation, I think, to see maybe, for example, how do loyalty programs differ between B2B, B2C? I think that's just an amazing topic to talk about, and then I will be having a bit more information also into that conversation. So good question, Alexander. I don't have insights.
Stay tuned for the follow-up podcast.
Yeah. And one thing regarding B2B e-commerce system that we need to consider as well is integration. Because, you can place yourself as in a restaurant, and then you want to buy grocery for your restaurant. And then as a restaurant, you should go to different website, and you want to buy online, and you should go to different website and buy that. It's really painful for the customers. So, I mean, for individual, for a private customer, it's fine. B2C, it's fine. I can go and buy my staff there. But for the B2B, it's really important that nowadays more and more shops, they try to integrate their system to bigger system. Still, we don't have that much progress and development in that area. But I think integration and having centralized system and expose our product, our e-commerce system via API to those big system is really important to make it more comfortable for customers, for B2B customers, and also, I mean, being seen in more and more for the customers. I mean, being more efficient.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree there, because we're seeing also kind of two parties regarding moving products into B2B marketplaces or isolating the products more towards the brand, where the brand really owns the complete experience, because they would like to push an image or anything like that connected to the product. So we're kind of seeing two different tracks there. And obviously, integrations are a big part of that, where you would like to push your product in some cases to a marketplace, but other cases you would kind of keep that in-house. So that's really important with the integrations, of course.
Yeah, and one thing regarding the integration, I think in e-commerce, at least based on my knowledge, we don't have that much standards API. For example, in the LMS environment, many years ago, they invented kind of a standard API, and then it's really easy to integrate system together. But still in the e-commerce system, at least, as I said, based on my knowledge, still we don't have that. So I was thinking, if someone take the lead and invent this one as an open source system or something, it could be helpful, really helpful for the e-commerce systems.
Perfect. And last but not least, Mehdi, I have your question. How much should an e-commerce system handle human errors? Tell me a little bit where that comes from.
Okay. It's based on my recent experience in the B2B environment and also my previous experience in the B2C environment. So let's say we have, for example, a shop for clothes, and then customers, by mistake, I go and order 10 t-shirts and then pay for that. And then after I paid, then I realized, okay, it was much more expensive than what I thought. And then I realized, okay, I ordered 10. Then we need to handle that one. So it should be easy for the system to realize, okay, one customer should not need 10 t-shirts. So, and then, for example, I think we touched this topic during the previous question, because also it's related to AI and how AI can identify the user input mistakes, because as I said, based on my experience, it happens a lot. So users comes and order t-shirt XS size for the adult, and the system should recognize, okay, it could be a mistake by the customer because XS is too small for this customer, and based on the age, based on the different input that the customer entered in their profile. So I think And then based on that, it could be helpful. Imagine that the system tell you, okay, are you sure you want to order XS based on we think that it's not suitable for you. When I place myself as in a customer place, and if I see this message in an e-commerce system, I will be happy to see that. Or if the system say, okay, you order 10 t-shirts, are you sure you need 10? It's too much for one person. I think if we can integrate the system to AI and other system and then help the customer and handle their errors, their mistake, it makes really good customer experience. But then the question here is how much we should do that? Because if you ask this question, could be tricky, because let's say I'm a customer, I want to order 10 t-shirts. Then I ask that customer, okay, are you sure you want, you know, this question could make the customer think, okay, maybe I don't need it. You know, my question is how much we should handle those questions, or how much we should help and how much we shouldn't, because if customer wants to order something, then let he or she do that. Why not?
Yeah, that's good. Absolutely. And we have kind of seen this in a number of implementations, of course, and it's a thin line between those. And obviously, I think the first question is always, will this affect kind of the conversion? That if it has a potential to affect the conversion in a bad way, we will not do it. But if it has the potential to kind of drive the customer with a service, obviously we should do this. So yeah, you're on spot there, absolutely. But in some cases, I'm seeing kind of services that analyzes kind of, are you really sure you want to pick service point this far from your home address? There's actually one nearer to your house. That's a really good service, because in some cases you haven't even noticed that you could select another service point, or you don't know that the local market has started delivering packages and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a thin line there.
And I think in general, when you have manual processes, I mean, errors will occur eventually. So usually how I attack it is like, okay, how fast can you recover from failure or you know, unexpected behavior? And also like, what will be the business impact of it? Because I think in general, if you really want to, you can build fully optimized solution that covers all your cases. And I mean, that goes for internal processes, especially and related to AI, that, okay, you want to be more efficient and have like a USP being faster your way of working. But also then, okay, what happens if an error occurred? If you can recover quickly, then, I mean, maybe you don't need to build like a full-fledged tech solution that optimizes it. And then also touching to your question, I mean, it is tricky because finding unexpected behavior on the site and prompting the customers, is this what you really want, will create friction and hurt the conversion rate to some degree. What I think would be interesting here is, I mean, from the sustainability perspective, when you see behavior that will probably lead to returns of products, let's say that you have the same product in your cart, but with different sizes, or you put 10 sneakers in the cart. Then we can actually help the customers being proactive. It can be a manual error, as you said, but it could also be like a unhealthy behavior from the customer. So they can probably help them to, you know, make the right decision that's also like beneficial for the customer and the environment.
I feel like that would be hugely beneficial for me going on shopping sprees. So yeah, I appreciate that. And Christian, what are your thoughts on the matter?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. And yeah, we talked a little bit about AI, about what it can do. And here we have the predictive analytics. So, but we also have something that we did work on in a previous workplace. We did work on the fraud detection in the payment service. And that is having some of the elements that we talk about here to detect suspicious pattern and anomalies. And it's not suspicious, but it's out of what these customers usually do. So that is one thing that we talked about here, to actually have that flagged or trigger. But what should it trigger? And that is an interesting conversation, obviously. should a trigger a response shown on the web page, like an information or something like that? And what will happen then? Will it decrease the conversion rate? Or, you know, what will happen? I think it's interesting to go back to what Oscar mentioned, you know, the refund when you send back something and look at the total conversion. If I buy 10 t-shirts, how many will I get back? If I send back 9 of them, what was the actual conversion? Okay, you had a good conversion on the actual page, but you got 9 of the t-shirts back. Was it, when it comes to a customer journey, conversion rate, was it a good conversion rate then? So I think sustainability will force us to look at the total conversion, as I call it, both before the transaction and after the transaction. And that will help us in these types of to give the customer this type of information. I think if we give them the information through a sustainability message, I think it's easier to convey that message than it is to just ask, did you really do the right thing now? 10 t-shirts, you know. So I think it's conveying the message. Acting on it is harder than actually finding the triggers, I think.
I agree. And in the end of the day, you want to support the customers in their shopping journey, not blaming them. So I think you, it's a good point.
Amazing. Perfect. Well, obviously, before we end the podcast, I'd love to say thank you so much to all of you for sharing your thoughts and experiences and different ideas that everyone can learn. So, yeah, I mean, we've had Alexander Fuga, who's the CEO of ShopLab. Oscar Eriksson, Head of Tech and CTO at Afound. We've got Mehdi Mohseni, who's Technical Lead at Polestar. And we have Christian Englund, who's Agile Product Owner at Alcel Group. If you're hiring for new technical roles or looking for a new role, feel free to get in touch with us here at Evolution. Or if you or anyone you know would like to be featured on a future podcast, you can drop me a message too. I'm Georgia Benton, and you can find me on LinkedIn or email me at georgia.benton@evolution-nordics.com, or even visit our website evolutionjobs.com/UK/Nordics. Thank you so much again to all of our guests, and thank you for listening. We hope you can join us next time.